We'll be right back. you know, people brought it to our attention and we're like, whoa. But we definitely believe in paying people fairly and everybody getting paid. You know, that's something that we're...
That was just an interesting fact that came up because of the interview, and I always wondered about it.
No, we paid, but, you know, it was not super exorbitant. Oh, my God. I mean, I wish I had the receipts for how much we paid, because I remember at the time, like, going into a studio like Chicago Recording Company. So that studio was owned by Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, you know, who, like, producers who had, I forget what band they were in before, not long after Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation, which was a huge, huge album. Mm-hmm. And the hallways were like lined with like platinum albums from records that they'd worked on. And it was a really spacious studio. Each of us was in our own room in this sort of like L-shaped studio. So it was like a cube, with the control room being in, you know, sort of like the negative space if it was an L. And, you know, Steven there with windows into all three rooms. And so it was just like glass rooms. I was in a really large room with the drums, the biggest room. Brian was in like medium-sized room beside me with a grand piano that Steve had mic'd up and was using the sympathetic vibrations from the strings on the grand piano as a additional like room sort of reverb. And then Reed was in the room beyond that. So it was kind of like visually being in the same room with each other, and, you know, had a much sort of bigger and punchier sound than what we were used to. So we definitely liked the kind of the bigger sound that we were getting on that record, because it was, to us, sort of closer to what we sound like live, you know?
Yeah.
And I know Steve is known for really capturing that live sound too on studio recordings, and like a lot of other producers or engineers. One thing I just want to touch upon in regards to the production again for the record, I've read a lot of interviews about Albini's production and engineering. As you've alluded to, sometimes he's very hands-off, and then other times he's more involved, such as recommending alternative tunings. I know infamously he told the Pixies to play with metal picks instead of the standard picks they were playing with. Did he present the band anything to work with during these recording sessions, or was it just completely, you're left to the wiles, I'm pressing record and just perform?
It was pretty much like just perform. You know, he knew that we could play. You know, he'd seen us live a bunch of times, and I think he was more kind of like about getting out of our way, which in some ways is kind of a, you know, maybe more of an idea than a reality, because you hear the recording and it has like some very distinctive things about it that are very Steve. Like, you know, I'd done a bunch of home recording, and I remember, like, the drum sound. Like, there's something about, like, the sounds of his drums, particularly his snare drum. So, you know, I'm in this big room. There's, like, far mics, so you get, like, a microsecond of a delay, which just kind of, like, you know, gives it a nice sort of reflection sound. But I could hear, like, something else going on, and I asked him. I said, do you have delay on the snare drum? And he said, no. And then I asked again later, I said, I'm sure I'm hearing delay. He said, no, how could you be hearing delay? There's no delay there. And then I asked again about it. And I think like the third time I asked, he said, yes, there is. And so I kind of like discovered that, oh, there's one of Steve's tricks, is like he puts like, you know, these like maybe one or two, sometimes three very short delays on drums, which just, you know, give you the sense of space, because it's sort of like the sound of the snare ricocheting off of surfaces, you know?
Last time we talked a little bit about the song titles. I wanted to ask about, well, one of them anyway, because of the music video as well. They don't call them chihuahuas anymore. In the music video, there's like a chihuahua and there's all these like flash sayings. One of them's like an alternate title from a Tragically Hip album. I wanted to ask a bit about that, and maybe the song in general, if you remember kind of coming up with it.
Well, the title, that Saskadelphia thing, that's what you're asking about.
Yes.
When we saw that the Hip were, I don't know if they used it or they were going to use it. I feel like it has to be a case of them just having seen the video. One of them saw the video. The word got implanted in their brain and, you know, it was accessed later. Because, you know, we had that video was out like long. I don't know if the Hip were around. You know, I have no idea. But we had no kind of like awareness of the Hip. And that was definitely before, you know, years before anything I heard about them using that. And that word, like, you know, we just came up with these words, and Saskadelphia was like just from like word games, word play from being on the road and making up fake names for like signs that you see on the highway, you know, like, you know, Saskatoon 128 kilometers. And then so it was just a word that we bandied around from just our travels, you know, because we mostly toured in Canada and the States. You know, we went to Europe a little bit, but mostly it was Canada and the States. So, like, it's not long before those names all become sort of a jumble. It's very easy to put words together, place names together. And honestly, like, how we came up with any of this stuff, there are so many things that I just do not remember. And I so often, Reed Diamond, who is our bass player, the late Reed Diamond, was an incredible storyteller and liar, great fabricator of stories, sometimes like mixing lots of truth and fiction within the same story. But he had a great memory for detail. So Reed and I together, we would be able to remember a lot of things together. But there are so many things from then that I like just don't remember. But you know, it had a kind of like a vaguely sort of like what we perceived of as being sort of Mexican sound to it. So the whole video concept and everything like that, that was the only video. We made 5 videos, and that was the only one that someone else made. We did the other 4. And that one was directed by a woman, Paula Fairfield. And she presented us with the kind of like the idea of doing the video and the concept and that. So it was a different way of working, and kind of bogs you down when you're kind of doing everything, making your videos and recording your records and everything. So it was pretty uncharacteristic of us to be sort of hands off with that. But we did. You know, I'm really glad that we did, because it's something that's really different in our records. Or in our videos. And, you know, we got to work with some different people that were friends of ours. Kim Durko, who was director of photography in it. I'd done other work with her. We'd all done work with her. And then Paula Fairfield, who directed that, she went on to be a very well-known sound designer. And, you know, has won lots of top awards for doing sound design on, like, Game of Thrones and Darren Aronofsky films, like Mother and Black Swan. She's super talented, but kind of, like, moved out of directing more into sound, probably because of that video. She was like, cuff that. And...
Hmm.
You're tuned into Revolution Rock here on CJAM 99.1 FM in the Windsor, Detroit area. I'm your host, Dave Constantino, joined with Adam Pelche. We're also syndicating across several different stations here in Canada. And we're doing something special tonight. We're playing an album in full. That's it, an album in full. And we're also having an interview in between these sets.
Yeah, so the album in question is Sport Fishin', The Lure of the Bait, The Luck of the Hook by Shadowy Men on a Shadowy Planet. We are celebrating its 30th anniversary as it was released on June 25th.
Yes.
1993, and we had an opportunity to talk with the drummer of Shadowy Men on a Shadowy Planet, Don Pyle, as you've been hearing in the last little bit. Now, because this is an album with a lot of songs, in fact, 24 overall on the original release, we figured, well, partway through, we'd actually run back some of the names of those songs. So going through those in reverse order, we heard Honey, You're Wasting Ammo, Peace Porch Rock, We're Not an F'n Surf Band, Algoma Reflections, Hey Girl, Unwatchable Bee. We had an interview with Don Pyle, and before that we had another block of music from the record.
We heard one of my favorites from this record, Cheese in the Fridge, Spy School Graduation Theme, Farbs, and The Singing Cowboy, a song where Reed Diamond does sing vocals.
And we should note, Farbs has like at least six different fade-outs, false fade-outs. It's fantastic.
Before that, we heard another portion of the interview with Don Pyle of Shadowy Men on Shadowy Planet. And then we had more music.
That's right. We heard from the first section of the album with That Was Ear Me Callin' a Horse, Plastics for 500, Bob, Relax, You Will Think You Are a Chicken, Fortune Tellin' Chicken, Three-Piece Suit, Spend a Night, Not a Fortune, and Unwatchable A or Unwatchable 1, whatever you want to call it. So yeah, we just have maybe about a quarter of the album left to get to. And then we're also, in addition to playing the entirety of the record, we still have a good chunk of the interview with Don Pyle to go through. We have about 20 more minutes left, so we're going to break that into two separate sections. And in addition, there were a series of songs that were recorded around this time period, released on various sessions, EPs, compilations. So those were compiled, by and large, as the bonus tracks for this particular reissue that was done in 2016.
Yep.
So we're going to be playing a good chunk of those as well to end off the program. But we still have about an hour left, and more of this great interview with Don Pyle coming up. Already we talked about his work with Steve Albini, which I thought was very fascinating. Kind of the mindset of the band going into these recordings and the differences between this and their prior records. We're going to be getting into more information in this next interview section, including where the band was at, not only with the sessions that they recorded for this record, but where they kind of found themselves after this album was released.
Exactly, and a lot more cool things, like they talk about when they won a Juno in 1992.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get to it. We're going to continue with the interview right now, and then some more music coming up shortly as well to finish off the Sport Fishin' album. Thanks for tuning in so far. This is Revolution Rock.
So you've had this recording experience going to Chicago. I believe it was one of the first times. Well, it would have been the first time you recorded a full record outside of Canada. It was just singles otherwise.
Yeah.
You have this video. Once the album was released, what was the general feeling from the band about it? Were they satisfied with the recording? And what was it like after the release of the record?
I think all of our records,